Good morning to everyone. Okay. That was the words of that were really good. I really appreciated that. They, you know, it fits in well with what I've got for you today. It's talking about, you know, without, you know, God providing the manna, there's no hope. And to think of, you know, that as we mentioned in class today, we've been given a commandment to love God and to love our neighbor. But we have no capacity to love. The love comes from God. And it's when we make that connection with God through our faith that we make that connection with love and gives us the power to love God and to love our neighbors. And I thought this song put it very eloquently. Now, I don't know what you call this group up here, if you call them a band, an orchestra, or my music terms aren't very good, I'm afraid, but I really appreciate your ministry here, all of your ministry for that. So we'll be spending much of our time in Luke chapter 15 today, and we'll have, so maybe you want to turn in Luke 15 for us, and we'll be spending most of our time there. Mainly what I had today was the scriptures. So if you can just follow along with me or I'll read them to you as well. So let's start with verse 1 in Luke 15. And it says, "Now the tax collectors and sinners were all drawing near to him. And the Pharisees and the scribes grumbled, saying, 'This man receives sinners and eats with them.' So he told them this parable. What man of you, having 100 sheep, if he has lost one of them, does not leave the 99 in the open country and go after the one that is lost until he finds it? And when he has found it, he lays it on his shoulders, rejoicing." And skipping a few verses down to verse 8. "Or what woman, having 10 silver coins, if she loses one coin, does not light a lamp and sweep the house and seek diligently until she finds it? And when she has found it, she calls together her friends and neighbors, saying, 'Rejoice with me, for I have found the coin that was lost.' Just so, I tell you, there is joy before the angels of God over one sinner who repents." So, here is a situation. The scribes and Pharisees have seen Jesus attracting people that are living unrighteous lives. And Jesus isn't reprimanding these people. He's accepting them as they are. But if Jesus isn't reprimanding them, then isn't he giving their lifestyles his stamp of approval? Surely this is wrong. And Jesus knows what the scribes and Pharisees are thinking. And so he addresses the matter. He starts out with the two parables that we just read. The parable of the lost sheep and the parable of the lost coin. And he will follow these shortly with the parable of the prodigal son. So the parable of the lost sheep captures the attention of the men and the boys in the audience there. And the parable of the lost coin captures the attention of the women and the girls in the audience. And the prodigal son will capture the attention of the scribes and Pharisees. But it's more than just three versions of the same story. The lost sheep, the lost coin, and the prodigal son represent three different ways that people can become lost. They are in peril because of the first great danger that humanity faces. That great danger is the danger of unrighteousness. The sheep was lost because of his own carelessness. It stumbled into unrighteousness, and it has been ensnared by it. And as the song we sang was saying, that it's struggling to get back out. and it can't find its way. So the sheep is like a small child who has come upon a rattlesnake and tried to make it his friend. The child has been bitten. She needs help or she will die. The child, the sheep, doesn't need my reprimand. She needs my help. She doesn't need my judgment. She needs my love. The coin was lost because of the carelessness of its caretaker. The coin is like children who have suffered sexual or physical abuse from their caretakers, or children that have been indoctrinated into hatred all their lives by people they trust, their own parents and religious leaders. Unrighteousness has the power to corrupt and the power to destroy. It has the power to make the innocent guilty. These two will be lost unless someone acts with compassion. So the sheep and the coin both need rescue, or they will perish. They cannot come for help. They need help to come to them. They need someone to search and to find them. But the prodigal son is different. The prodigal son is like an adult who knows what he is doing is wrong and does it anyway. There is no search because the prodigal knows exactly where home is. His unrighteousness is different. He is lost because he wants to be lost. So let's reflect a moment on these three cases. First, the sheep and the coin. The sheep has wandered into unrighteousness, and the coin was born into unrighteousness. Unrighteousness corrupts and it destroys. And this is terrifying because we know that it could have happened to any one of us. None of us chose the family that we were born into. I could have been born atheistic or agnostic, Hindu or Buddhist, Jewish or Muslim, or 100 other religions, or none at all. Or I could have been born into a house of abusive whores. If I had been born addicted to crack, could I have escaped the addiction? If I had been indoctrinated into hate from the time I was a toddler, could I have found a life of compassion and grace? If I had suffered abusive whores as a small child, would I be free of those nightmares now? Billions of babies have inherited unrighteousness from the choices of their parents and their grandparents. They are lost because someone in their family has broken the moral compass. But most, if not all of us here, inherited a working moral compass. And because of that, we have been born rich. We are born in Christian homes, rich in the knowledge of Jesus and His grace. We inherited this wealth from the choices our parents and grandparents have made, the lives they lived. But does this wealth that we have, does this wealth make us blind to the poverty of others? Of course not. We know how easily we could have been born in a different, far different situation, with families that had a broken moral compass. We realize that many suffer horrors that God never intended them to bear. This was not God's will. It is the will of people who have violated God's will. They inherited unrighteousness. They have been corrupted by it and are passing the pain and the stench on to their children. They don't need our judgment. They need our grace. That's why Jesus wasn't reprimanding them. He was giving them love and acceptance, what they needed. And when we realize that these people never had a decent chance, our hearts go out to them, as it should. We think, why weren't they given a decent chance? That's not fair. Salvation isn't about justice. Salvation is about rescue. So now let's think about the prodigal son. The prodigal son didn't inherit unrighteousness. The prodigal son didn't stumble into unrighteousness. The prodigal son chose unrighteousness. He was born rich. He was born into a family that had a working moral compass. He knew exactly what he was doing, and he did it anyway. So let's read it, starting at verse 11. And he said, there was a man who had two sons, and the younger of them said to his father, Father, give me the share of the property that is coming to me. And he divided his property between them. And many days later, the younger son gathered all that he had and took it into a far country, and there squandered his property in reckless living. And when he had spent everything, a severe famine arose in the country, and he began to be in need. And so he went and hired himself out to one of the citizens of that country, who sent him into the fields to feed the pigs. So here we have a Jewish boy feeding the pigs. And he was longing to be fed with the pods that the pigs ate, but no one gave him anything. But when he came to himself, he said, how many of my father's hired servants have more than enough bread, but here I am perishing with hunger. I will arise and go to my father, and I will say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me as one of your hired servants. And he arose and came to his father. But while he was still a long ways off, his father saw him and felt compassion, and ran and embraced him and kissed him. And the son said to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you, and I am no longer worthy to be called your son. But the father said to his servants, bring quickly the best robe and put it on him, and put the ring on his hand and shoes on his feet, and bring the fatted calf and kill it, and let us eat and celebrate. For this my son was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. And they began to celebrate. So here is the complete story of the prodigal son. Just like the first two, that which was lost was found. So we have the three cases. The coin inherited unrighteousness. The sheep unknowingly wandered into unrighteousness, and the prodigal son chose unrighteousness. But in all three cases, the story ends with joy and celebration at the recovery of the lost. But Jesus isn't finished. He knows that while human nature wants mercy for people that never had a decent chance, human nature also bristles against giving mercy to someone who doesn't deserve it. He knew exactly what he was doing when he did it. That person doesn't deserve mercy. That person deserves justice. This goes against the very core of our nature. We want justice. And so Jesus continues with a story. Starting at verse 25. Now his older son was in the field, and as he came and he drew near the house and heard music and dancing, and he called one of his servants and asked what these things meant. And he said to him, Your brother has come, and your father has killed the fatted calf, because he has received him back safe and sound. But he was angry, and he refused to go in. His father came out and entreated him, but he answered his father, Look, these many years I have served you, and I have never disobeyed your command. Yet you never gave me a young goat that I might celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours came, who has devoured your property with prostitutes, you killed the fatted calf for him. And he said to him, Son, you are always with me, and all that you have is mine. And all that is mine is yours. It was fitting to celebrate and to be glad. For this, your brother, was dead and is alive. He was lost and is found. Now it's easy for us as humans to sympathize with the feelings of the older son. My younger brother wasted his inheritance, his half of the inheritance, and now he has come back to start spending my half. Why should he get to enjoy my inheritance after he wasted his own? Why do I have to suffer for his sins? That's not fair. That's not just. Doesn't the older brother have a good case? Doesn't he have a right to be angry? Wouldn't I be upset if it were me? Has Jesus hit a nerve here? Yes, of course he has. He intended to. We humans have such a strong sense of justice. What is yours, and what is mine. I don't take your stuff, and you don't take mine. No one teaches us justice. It comes as part of the package of being human. Just watch any kindergartner that gets shoved as he's in line. What's going to happen next? Justice. He's going to make sure that kid gets shoved back. And he's not going to feel guilty about it, because that kid got exactly what
He what he deserved. He feels vindicated. And there it is. The second great danger that humanity faces. It is called self-righteousness. It is the attitude of satisfaction as seeing people get what they deserve when they've done wrong. Self-righteousness comes so natural to us that we don't even feel that it is wrong. Because at his heart is justice. But that heart is stone cold. Because self-righteousness has no love. It is bare, naked justice. And it doesn't feel wrong because justice is what makes us human. Self-righteousness is 100% human and 0% God. So what is Jesus getting at? Jesus is saying that as long as you hold on to justice, as long as you cling to your rights for how you are treated, for your stuff, you will never be able to truly love your brother. You see, Jesus doesn't want us to be human. Humans are mortal. Humans will perish. Jesus has become human so that humans can become God. We can be born again with His divine nature. His nature is a just nature. But it is a nature that goes beyond justice. It is a nature of love and grace. To go beyond justice means to let go of my rights and to not require justice from others. It means loving others so much that I would rather suffer the injustice myself than require the payment from them. That's what Jesus did for us, because that's His nature. If we are His children, then we share that nature. And if we don't share that nature, then we are not His. 1 John 3:10 puts this eloquently. In this the children of God are manifest, and the children of the devil, that whosoever doeth not righteousness is not of God, neither he that loveth not his brother. The unrighteous do not love God, and the self-righteous do not love their brother. So the three parables have identified a fourth way that a person can be lost. The sheep, the coin, the prodigal son, and the older brother. This means that the parable of the prodigal son is a personification of these two great dangers. The younger son represents unrighteousness. He did not care about his father. In the Jewish tradition, it was legal for a son to ask for his inheritance early. But it was a very unloving thing to do. It was equivalent to telling your father, "I wish you were dead." This is the trap of the irreligious, the great danger they face, because they do not want God in their lives. And the older son represents
self-righteousness. He did not care about his brother. God wants a personal relationship with each of us. That's how his love is dispensed to us, so that we may love others. But when we substitute religion for relationship, we push God away. And then we don't have the love to give. So instead of providing others with the love and grace from God, we have no love to give. So instead, we provide them with the awareness of our high standards that we expect them to meet. And they feel that judgment. So as we close, think of these two dangers that we face. And as Christians, we face both of these today. Because there is a danger to think that if salvation is based on works, then I earned it. And as long as you feel like you earned it, you will not be able to love your brother. But if you believe that salvation is entirely grace, then aren't we tempted to not do anything? I don't have to do anything. The problem we have is that we're focused on the gift instead of the relationship. If we would focus on the relationship, we would find that the love of God compels us to obey. We don't obey because of salvation. We obey because we are saved, because of the love of Jesus in us. And that is what it is to be a true friend of God. If God were to coerce our obedience, if He were to require our obedience, then it's not a relationship. God cannot coerce your obedience and have a relationship with you, because it's not a relationship. But if you love me, you will obey. If you do not obey God, then you are not His friend. So remember these two great dangers that we face. And give each other grace, because we both struggle. I mean, we all struggle with both of these problems. And we need grace far more than judgment. Thank you.